I have something slightly different this morning, and I have to confess that I used these three readings a couple of months ago at Lancaster Road, but with a completely different set of sermonettes, as it were. We've got three readings and three talks. And it was as I was doing it at Lancaster Road, I began to realise that even though I'd picked them at random and talked about them at random, by the time I finished, I'd actually found that they'd actually got something quite unique that linked them and made it particularly appropriate for a worship. So I have changed some of the hymns around and some of the order slightly, but I've kept the same three readings. So when we get to the end, I want to see if you can see what the connection is. You know, sometimes it surprises me when I plan worship in exactly the way it comes out, but perhaps it shouldn't do really, because that's the way God works, to surprise us sometimes and to challenge us. So Stephen's going to read the first story for us, and they're all from John's Gospel.
First reading is from John's Gospel, chapter 6, verses 5 to 11, on page 124 in the New Testament section of the Church Bibles. John, chapter 6, verses 5 to 11. Jesus feeds a great crowd. Jesus looked round and saw that a large crowd was coming to him. So he asked Philip, "Where can we buy enough food to feed all these people?" He said this to test Philip. Actually, he already knew what he would do. Philip answered, "For everyone to have even a little, it would take more than 200 silver coins to buy enough bread." Another of his disciples, Andrew, who was Simon Peter's brother, said, "There is a boy here who has 5 loaves of barley bread and 2 fish, but they will certainly not be enough for all these people." "Make the people sit down," Jesus told them. There was a lot of grass there. So all the people sat down. There were about 5,000 men. Jesus took the bread, gave thanks to God, and distributed it to the people who were sitting there. He did the same with the fish, and they all had as much as they wanted.
One of the stories that we know so well, isn't it? The feeding of the 5,000. And it's quite interesting that this is one of the, well, the only miracle that's recorded in the three Gospels, which is quite interesting. And I think it's also quite interesting that the main character is a young boy. Out of all these people, 5,000 men, let alone all the women and children that were there, somehow this young boy stands out amongst the crowd. And I can just imagine when probably his mum, but it could well have been his dad, got his packed lunch together in the morning and he was going off for the day. Quite a substantial lunch, really. 5 barley loaves and 2 fishes. I don't know what you take for packed lunch. Does anybody take packed lunch to work these days? See, normally I'd be asking the children this, because finding out what they've got in their wraps or their sandwiches. What about some of our youngsters at the back? Is it wraps these days and not sandwiches? Everybody's too shy to answer. Well, I still, fortunately, still walk home for lunch and make a sandwich. Normally it's ham or cheese. If I'm lucky, it's corned beef. But I know today we can buy all sorts of things, can't we? The healthy options, what we're seeing in schools and have been for quite a few years now. Less processed meats and things and chips and fatty foods, but more wholesome salads and fresh vegetables and things like that. Because in reading some of the background to the stories and remembering what I was told in Sunday school, oh well, this is all about sharing this miracle, because all the adults were really embarrassed because this little boy went up and said, well look, you can have what I've got. And so all the embarrassed adults sat there going like this and produced their packed lunches as well, and then there was enough for everybody. Well, I'm not sure that I actually believe that answer, because I think this is a special miracle. And I think there are two key points from this story. The great crowd that followed Jesus were hungry. And they were hungry in two ways. There was a spiritual hunger. They had this emptiness inside. They wanted to know about Jesus, but they wanted to know about God. And Jesus preached and talked and healed and worked in such a special way that they wanted to know more. And this is why Jesus attracted so many wonderful crowds, because Jesus spoke and acted in such a special way and gave them a glimpse of God that they didn't see. God the Father was brought home to them. And so naturally, they wanted to know more, so they followed him wherever they went. And because you can just imagine, you know, if we had worship for 3 or 4 or 5 hours, and you were having such a good time, and then suddenly you realised that the dinner was burnt in the oven, and what are you going to have to eat? Well, exactly the same happened, late in the evening. Jesus testing the disciples. Where are we going to get enough bread from? And God knew that we have a spiritual need, but we have a physical need as well. And it might be fine for the service to go on for 3 hours this morning, but the dinner's going to be ruined. God was able to meet both the physical and the spiritual needs. But it also reminds us the importance that our children and young people play, isn't it? Sometimes as adults we lose that childish nature, that innocence in a way, because perhaps we've experienced more of life. And yet there's a simple honesty in the child as he comes forward with his lunch to offer what he has. God's given us some wonderful gifts, but sometimes we just want to keep it for ourselves instead of sharing it. And Jesus proved in such a wonderful way how he can take a little and turn it into so much. So much that there were 12 baskets left over. And everybody had all that they needed. And it shows us what a generous God we have to give more than we can ever need, if only we will share what we have.
The second reading is from John's Gospel, chapter 2, verses 6 to 10, found on page 118 in the Church Bibles. John, chapter 2, verses 6 to 10. The wedding at Cana. The Jews have rules about ritual washing, and for this purpose, 6 stone water jars were there, each one large enough to hold about 100 liters. Jesus said to the servants, "Fill these jars with water." They filled them to the brim, and then he told them, "Now draw some water out and take it to the man in charge of the feast." They took him the water, which now had turned into wine, and he tasted it. He did not know where this wine had come from, but of course the servants who had drawn it out of the water knew. So he called the bridegroom and said to him, "Everyone else serves the best wine first, and after the guests have had plenty to drink, he serves the ordinary wine. But you have kept the best wine until now."
Thank you, Stephen. Jesus' very first miracle. Another story that we know well, the wedding at Canaan. Must have been some wedding that, mustn't it? We know Jewish weddings went on for several days. And again, there was a sort of slight misconception perhaps that Jesus here was, well, particularly his mum, because it was his mum that instigated this, as we all know, as mums instigate most things, well, especially where us boys are concerned, and told him what he had to do. And I don't think he was trying to, you know, save the embarrassment of the family or those involved. I think at the very start of his ministry, Jesus was putting down a marker, setting the scene, as it were, for his ministry in a very special and powerful way. Is anybody getting a hint of what the theme might be in the two readings? Not yet. That's good. 600 litres of wine. That's a bit irresponsible, isn't it? And normally at the end of the wedding feast, when everybody's absolutely plastered, you know, perhaps Jesus was having a bit of a joke, I don't know. 600 litres is an awful lot. I have often prepared a little something in case we got stopped at customs on the way back from France on holiday. And it sort of goes like, "Well, officer, this was bottles of water when I left France." Because now you can bring as much as you like back, can't you, really, within reason for personal consumption. But then I think 600 litres is still an awful lot, and we've never bought anywhere near that much back. Now, I think there's something special that Jesus is saying here at the very start of his ministry. What were the stone water jars there for? For ritual washing. And so what did they signify in that ritual washing? Something that related to the old way. This was part of the tradition of the Jews. This was the old way. Jesus was now bringing a new way. Not to say that the old rituals and practices of the Jews were wrong, but in the light of Jesus' ministry, he was bringing a new way to God. And Jesus represents this in such a special way. Because what he was giving was new wine. The new wine of the kingdom. And what was special about this wine? Well, I must admit, I don't have a wine cellar, it's just the cupboard under the stairs. But I was sorting out some of the bottles, because I have some that we drink now and some that we save or try and save, so I'm quite good like that. You know, and I found a bottle of wine that we bought on a wine tour in St. Emilion in 1989 or 1990. And it's a 1988 bottle of wine. The chateau is still going, so I was thinking of writing to them and saying, is it worth me opening it, or should I just sort of clean the drain with it, because I'm not too sure. But we'll see, I might open it one day. See, Jesus made some very important analogies with wine, didn't he? He said you can't put new wine in old skins. And again, another very powerful message. The new has come to replace the old. And what's more important is, I'm saving the best till last. And I'm not sure that the best is actually here, because I believe the best is yet to come, when we're able to meet Jesus face to face and our knowledge of God becomes full and rich and wonderful. For that's the promise that Jesus has in offering us the new wine of the kingdom. Yes, we get to taste it now, and that's very important. One of the things that we do like doing when we go on holidays to go somewhere different and taste the wine. And I have to confess to being a member of the Wine Society, and we were up in Stevenage on Thursday tasting some wines from southern France, which are free. So you have to be careful when you have to drive home. Some people spit it out. I'm afraid we don't. But we have a taste of the kingdom of heaven and the new wine that God has to offer us here and now. But we don't taste it fully until we reach glory in heaven. And that's a special promise that Jesus has for all of us, for each one of us. Come and taste the new wine of the kingdom. The old is past. The new is here in Jesus.
The third reading is from John's Gospel, chapter 11, verses 17 to 27. On page 133 in the Church Bibles. John chapter 11, verses 17 to 27. Jesus, the resurrection and the life. When Jesus arrived, he found that Lazarus had been buried 4 days before. Bethany was less than 3 kilometers from Jerusalem, and many Judeans had come to see Martha and Mary to comfort them over their brother's death. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed in the house. Martha said to Jesus, "If you had been here, Lord, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask him for. Your brother will rise to life," Jesus told her. "I know," she replied, "that he will rise to life on the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me will live, even though they die. And all those who live and believe in me will never die. Do you believe this? Yes, Lord, she answered. I do believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who was to come into the world.
And so from the beginning we've jumped right to the end. Here Jesus is at the end of his earthly ministry. Jesus had been off away from Jerusalem and the surrounding areas in the north of the country. And Mary and Martha had sent a message to Jesus to say that their brother was ill. Please come. And so there was this sort of tussle going on. And I can imagine the disciples saying to Jesus, look, don't go down there, it's too close to Jerusalem. There are people already after you. If you go, there's going to be trouble. And so Jesus was torn, really, because this was a family that he'd spent time with and knew well. I'm sure it was a place that he had stayed, and certainly a place that he felt at home because he was there during the last days of his ministry. And we remember Mary doing that really significant and powerful act as she washed Jesus' feet. But Jesus wasn't delaying because he was worried about his own safety. Again, Jesus was going to perform one of those special acts of love which only he could do. And so he delayed a while. And during that delay, Lazarus died. And he knew there would be a lot of people there because that was the tradition of the Jews. There would be a lot of mourners, even those that didn't know the family. And so I imagine there would have been a reasonable crowd. And it's interesting that it was Martha that came out to greet Jesus, not Mary. And she was angry with him, and rightly so, because if he'd have been there, her brother wouldn't have died. And then she makes a special profession of faith. You are the Messiah. You can do anything. And Jesus responds by saying, your brother's going to come back to life. And even more amazingly, Martha says, yes, I know. When we're all raised. And Jesus says, no. I'm going to bring your brother back to life. And so he orders the tomb to be opened. I would imagine that would have caused people to stand back a little while. Even if the body's been embalmed, I would imagine it would have started to pong by now. So Jesus orders the tomb to be opened. And he cries in prayer to his father. And Lazarus appears from the tomb. And everybody is amazed. But why were they so amazed? Jesus again sending a powerful message. If he can bring Lazarus back to life, what's going to happen when he meets his own death? See, Jesus was pointing the way to salvation and to the cross. And yet they didn't quite understand it. Jesus, the resurrection and the life, as Stephen mentioned at the start of that passage. Jesus was pointing to the cross, to his own death, to his own resurrection, and to our own salvation. And so have you worked out what the link is? I hope so, because the link is here, as in a few moments we gather around the Lord's table. We share bread and wine, and we remember Jesus' sacrifice and his salvation. A place where God meets our physical and our spiritual needs as he offers us salvation through his Son. Everlasting life.